Into sports.
20 yards out, Hurst to shoot. Don't shoot! Oh, what a goal from Fabinho! Wow!
Then get into the all-new OTB Sports app.
I think when he apologises to me, I probably will say hello to him. Yeah, no.
Videos, sports news, live scores, interviews.
If Fabregas is going to come up to me in the street and give me some of the mouth that he would have given me on a football pitch, what would he do? He'd get a slap.
Plus, exclusive content on the OTB Podcast Network. The biggest names in sports, ready when you are. Search OTB Sports on your app store and download it now.
The OTB Podcast Network.
The News Rant on Off The Ball.
With Gillette. We don't just play the game, we change it. Gillette, made of what matters.
This is News Talk.
Hello there, you're very welcome along to Monday evening's Off The Ball. Joe Malloy with you, another very busy weekend to unpack. We'll try and do it between now and 10 o'clock. All-Ireland Hurling Final 2020 is Limerick against Waterford. Shane McGrath with us this hour. You can write off Waterford at your peril based on the second 35 minutes on Saturday evening. Quite extraordinary. After 8 o'clock, we'll see if Brian O'Driscoll and Keith Wood have come down from the highs of yesterday's second half against Georgia. 3 points apiece in an action-packed 40 minutes. Not good enough, said Andy Farrell. Mags Darcy joins us at 8.40 on the Camogie semi-finals, Galway against Kilkenny in the final. And on the football show, Pat Nevin with us after 9 o'clock. Kenny Cunningham as well to boot. 53106, the text number. We're at Off The Ball on Twitter. Richie McCormack, evening to you.
How are you, Joe? You well?
Yeah, very well, very well. And Nathan Murphy, good evening to you.
Good evening, Joe Malloy.
Sort of slurring my words here.
Murphy.
Wow.
Look, we had our Christmas party outside there, so we
get did you?
A few sherries and, you know, kind of a Delia. No, we didn't.
What?
No, we didn't. We didn't. We didn't.
Good Lord.
Are we having a Christmas party?
A virtual one, I suppose.
I don't know. Restaurants are open from tomorrow or Friday.
That's true.
We could meet up. We could be sociable, Joe. That's it's
true.
Allowed.
That's true. I don't know. Go for it. Do what you want to do. My honest plan ahead of going home for Christmas, I suspect a lot of people's plan is the same thing, is I'm laying low for the next while. I'm trying to avoid all that business. That's a hard decision, isn't it? You know, if you're seeing parents and family and stuff, Christmas week, do you want to be out in the town a la Nathan Murphy in the 2 or 3 weeks in advance?
Yeah, I think I'm past that. If I was 22 or 23, I'd say I'd be struggling to stay in for the next 3 weeks, though.
Yeah, that's true. That is true.
So I'm just going to stay at home and watch Fulham against Leicester of a Monday evening.
Wow. There is that. Fulham 2-0 up, by the way, 75 minutes on the clock. What is jumping out at you from the weekend that was, Nathan? Where are we going? Well, you want to set the agenda for us here this Monday evening?
Oh, well, we could have started with Ireland against Georgia. I'd do a deep dive into that 40 minutes. Highlights of the weekend, I'm caught between two. Obviously, Waterford and the hurling and the second half performance. But Grosjean in the Formula One, somehow surviving that crash, and I must have watched it back 25 times, and still I'm not quite sure how he emerged with what minor burns on his hands when he's in there for 27 28 seconds in this inferno. It's just insane. It's well, obviously an absolute credit to Formula One and what they've done safety wise when you look at the car split in two, the back of the car. Initially you're wondering, why are they running over here? The car, the main part of the car, is right here. But the bravery of the safety crew, of the medical staff, and just the miraculous way he emerges from the fire, I think that's probably the sporting story of the weekend.
Mm. I've only seen stills of it. I didn't realize he was caught up in it for 20 seconds.
The actual footage of it is freaky. First, the overhead shot of the fireball as he careens into the barrier, and then there's that shot from across the track of him. You're just essentially looking at flames, first of all, and you're like, all right, these guys are looking to put out the fire. And then this helmeted figure pokes a paw up from behind the barrier and starts clambering over it while himself in flames. You're going, Jesus Christ almighty, there's absolutely no way that he's coming out of this in any great shape. You're thinking you have another Niki Lauda kind of case in your hands. And as Nathan says, from to be able to post social media messages, to have photos from his hospital bed, he just has his hands gauzed and wrapped, and obviously they're in a pretty bad way, but the rest of them absolutely fine. It's a testament to the work that they've done safety wise in that sport over the course of the last 3-4 decades to make sure that those Niki Lauda type incidents don't happen, because there's no way Sebastian Grosjean, under any in any normal sphere of life, if that happens out on the road, he's gone. You know, and for him to do it at, you know, high speed in a major sporting event, for him to be on fire for like 30 seconds and be essentially grand and he, is so nothing short of a miracle.
So he was on fire. This is just down really to the fireproofing of the helmet and the face card then, is it?
And partially the car as well. There's essentially a halo effect in the car, in the, what you call it, in the chassis, that protects them from incidents like this. And has been, you know, it's been a bone of contention before over whether it was actually, you know, helping the car or not. But we've kind of seen the benefit of it this time around.
Well, Grosjean said himself in those social media posts from his hospital bed that he wasn't in favour of the halo. He didn't want it on the car, but he has changed his mind. Watch the video back, because you'll need to watch it 3 or 4 times, because the car completely splits in two and the back of the car is, say, 20, 30 feet away. And that's where you're looking, sort of assuming that the driver is still in there. But it turns out he's behind this barrier that I think was maybe the one safety failure, that the car, the front of the car, managed to go right the way through it. And it is just a ball of flames, and I think it's time to 28 seconds where he's just sat there in the middle of it before eventually the safety officer comes out of his car, runs straight into it and drags him out.
Wow. Okay, I'll watch that. I've watched Jurgen Klopp versus Des Kelly twice, so I can definitely watch that once. I can definitely watch that once. How that exchange, I mean, Jurgen Klopp's moaning a bit too much here, a little bit, isn't he? I mean, like, I get his frustration, but like, every week to be having to cut at the broadcasters, like, of course BT are going to pick the best game available to them. And, James Milner, was it a hamstring? Yes, congratulations. Just, I was glad Des Kelly stood up for himself a little bit.
Well, I think Des Kelly was ready for it.
He was.
So, Jurgen Klopp did this with Sky last week, and Sky, bizarrely, didn't even broadcast it. They cut it. Obviously felt that it was too much of a dig at them. So I'd say Des Kelly was prepared and ready to Jurgen Klopp and had all his answers. But it's still a difficult task when Jurgen Klopp is right there in your face, ready for a scrap. I thought Brian Kerr was good on this yesterday and actually looked at it in a slightly different way.
Yeah.
That Klopp knew exactly what he was doing, and that while Des Kelly does have a very, very valid point of, there's no point talking to me about this, talk to your own CEO who needs to talk to the other CEOs. That actually, that probably is happening in private, but that doesn't have any effect. But actually, Jurgen Klopp coming out on national TV, being this huge viral story all weekend, makes it a big, big issue that is going to come up again and again at every press conference now over the coming days and weeks. And maybe that is what ultimately forces something of a change, that, well, the sort of change that Liverpool want. But yeah, it did come across as very petty.
Well, I mean, if the broadcasters now aren't deliberately picking Liverpool for every half 12 game just for the
just for the interview,
the billion hits they'll get in the interview, then they're just not thinking, you know. I mean, I do have sympathy. It's really tough, and obviously Wednesday to half 12, 62 hours, they're all saying it makes a big difference. Half 12 to 3 o'clock to half five, without being horribly old school, I'm slightly skeptical of that. And the flip side is that you do get those extra hours to then prepare for the game against Ajax, you know, for instance, who are playing at half five on Saturday. So they've, you know, those extra few hours go Liverpool's way in the Champions League. There's just no way around this. Ultimately, you know, Klopp's point is, well, we're in different times now, and it's a more congested schedule, and that is true, but. Like, are you realistically going to ask BT to just give up the half 12 slot? Or do we want no football on half 12? Or it has to be non-Champions League teams? Maybe. But like, I can't say when on Saturday I was bored silly around the house, as is my life right now. I checked who's on the half 12 game. I can't say I was that upset. It was like a really good team in Liverpool, you know?
No. And I think probably the point Jurgen Klopp's trying to make is these are extraordinary times. People need to look at things differently. But that chance was there. Unfortunately for him, football, the owners, the Premier League, the teams have decided as much as possible to rock on as if nothing has changed.
Chris Wilder. It's Chris Wilder's fault. How many times did he mention Chris Wilder? He's so peeved at Wilder.
Well, again, there was about 4 different incidents coming out of that one post-match. So that's an entirely different scenario about substitutions and should it be 3 substitutes or 5 substitutes. You can absolutely see where Chris Wilder is coming from, because if Liverpool didn't have this injury problem, look, he'll say that the two are connected. Like, Liverpool's 4th or 5th sub is probably a James Milner, who's Sheffield United's 4th or 5th sub. So it's totally understandable. Maybe there's rules around it, but yeah, these are difficult situations. I don't think anyone right now has any sympathy for Premier League clubs, footballers, managers, when people have gone through a lot more.
Yeah, the point that somebody raised on Twitter, can't take credit for this at all, was, how many times have you heard a championship manager give out for the same reasons, that they don't have time to prepare for games and that the schedule is killing them? Because they, every week, they play, well, 46 games in the championship. They go Wednesday, Saturday, and granted, the kickoff times mightn't change that much, but they still have, you know, minimal preparation time for the actual games themselves. And it's like, almost never pops up as a bone of contention in the championship or beyond. It's just something that they have to get on with, and you throw in the cup games that they'd have, etc. on top of that. Like, they do essentially, you know, come towards what a top six Champions League, Premier League side are having to endure in a season. And it's never an issue. It's just that these are kind of more high stakes, more expensive assets that they're seeing be unavailable for them, the likes of James Milner now, the likes of Thiago, etc., that they don't want their assets being sat on the shelf and not essentially making them money, which is the issue here, really.
I mean, I think ultimately, if you could imagine, I mean, if Liverpool were playing at 3 or 5:30, I think Klopp would still be unhappy with the schedule. Like, there's a real fixation on this 11:30 thing. I think he's just unhappy with the schedule generally. You know, it's still going to be a massive toll for all the players. Some texts in. I drove the front end up on a curb in Tesco car park over the weekend. I had to have a quiet moment to myself after I managed to reverse it off the curb. It was my own Grosjean moment, says Michael. I mean, if the Grosjean incident had not ended so well, I wouldn't have read that text out, I want to assure you.
Did the man from the AA come running to drag him out of the car to save him?
I'm watching Drive to Survive on Netflix. Yeah, a lot of people recommend this. I still haven't got around to it at the moment. Brilliant TV, really enjoying the behind-the-scenes stuff of his own. If you want to see motor racing bravery, watch the Isle of Man TT race in 2021. Why do you never talk motorbikes? Big fan of the show, but you should talk about biking, says David. Well, I mean, what they do in the Isle of Man, there's bravery and there's madness. I find it hard to watch. That is just so scary. Why don't we talk motorbikes? I don't know, really. I suppose it doesn't seem to have a huge following. None of us here on the show follow it all that closely to know what the good stories are. Fire us in some emails there, David, about what we should be talking about. Give us some angles. Pretend you're in our production meeting, maybe. We should kick off the news round. It is on Off the Ball on News Talk with thanks to Gillette. We don't just play the game, we change it. Gillette made it what matters. There's a lot to get through. Rich, where do you want to go?
Yeah. We'll start with the King Power. There's a 5:30 start, so about 5 minutes to go in the meeting of Leicester and Fulham. And Fulham still lead by 2-0, both in the first half. Ademola Lookman and a penalty from Ivan Cavaliero for them. And Leicester had the chance, not going to happen tonight now it seems, to go level on points with the joint leaders Liverpool
2-1.
And Tottenham. 2-1, there we go, says Nathan. 2-1,
I have
a flash score up in front of me, it's not working. At 8 o'clock, West Ham welcome Aston Villa to the London Stadium. While in rugby, two provinces looking to maintain their 100% starts to the Pro 14 season tonight. Billy Holland captains Munster for the first time, for the visit of Zebre to Thomond Park, while Ulster are at Murrayfield to face Edinburgh, and both of those games kick off at 8:15. Limerick forward Aaron Galland's recuperating at home after spending last night in hospital. The Patrick's Well forward took a knock late in last night's 27-24 All-Ireland semi-final win over Galway. It's believed Galland's problem was a back injury, and his availability for the All-Ireland final in a fortnight is to be determined. Meanwhile, Joe Canning was also kept in overnight after taking a knock to the head in a collision with his teammate Joseph Cooney. It's believed Canning suffered a concussion in the incident. Limerick manager John Kiely, speaking afterwards, said that the lengthy delay to remove Canning from the pitch actually worked in his players' favour.
Yeah, it can be. Listen, you can't control that. You know, how can you prepare for it? You can't. Mikey Kiely was trying to engage them with a little bit of running during that time just to keep them engaged in a bit of movement, more than anything, that they wouldn't go cold and pull a muscle. But you just don't know how players are going to respond to that. And I've seen it over the years where it's gone one way one day and it's gone the other way. You know, sometimes the player and the team whose player went off, it galvanises them and they come with a big, strong push afterwards. And other days, you know, it can be something that really they find it difficult to respond to. So, you know, it's for us on the line, we just left it as was and we just took the breather. There was a few players that were probably under a bit of pressure at that stage and probably were delighted to get the 5 or 7 minute break, not for the reason it was, but and we sincerely hope that Joe is okay and will be back on his feet again very shortly. But you know, I was glad at the break maybe for some of our guys at the time because they were under pressure.
Yeah, thankfully the word on Joe Canning is good. There was a huge outpouring and he's recuperating and we absolutely wish him well because it didn't look like any fun at all. Interestingly, Malachy Clerkin had this today in the paper. I mean, so Canning weighed in with 4 sideline balls, points. yesterday, and I mean, it's just it is artistry. There's no, it is nothing short of artistry to watch him do this. And if you're watching him going, God, he seems so good at this, better than most, the numbers really show how far out in his own Canning is when it comes to this skill. Joe Canning has scored 27 sideline cuts in his career, 27. Now, the closest to him in the history of the game is Mick Maroney, who played for Clare in the 70s. He has 8. And Canning has 27. Of the hurlers still playing, Noel McGrath and Austin Gleeson are the closest. They have 5. So Ozzie Gleeson and Noel McGrath have 5. Canning has scored 7 in the last month. He is just stunningly good at this. There was a great photo as well doing the rounds, Nathan. I don't know if you saw it, of Canning, you know, just after cutting the ball and it's taken off in the air. It's just, it's one of the most sublime skills. And he knocks over 4 in a game.
Yeah, which a record for a championship match. And I saw Tommy Walsh making the point that because the surface is a bit more slippy with all the rain that's there, maybe it's a bit easier technically to sort of guide the hurl through it and get the slitter up. So maybe, listen, I think anything like that is sort of taking away from the brilliance of what Joe Canning can do. The debate there of should you give 2 points for a sideline cut?
Yeah. Heard Michael Deignan saying that. Then he was he was like canning out of 8 points just from sideline cuts alone.
Without wanting to bring it down to your level and without wanting to bring this to a Happy Gilmore level, is there a suggestion that given the way he's able to strike the ball from the sideline and score like that, that he'd be any use at golf?
Oh, they all would be. All the hurlers would be. If you press, I mean, obviously they play with the cack-handed, I guess, is the wrong, you know, they play with the wrong hand above the other hand, and some of them take that onto the golf course and it works fine for them. But if you press pause on any hurler at the top of his backswing, and I use the word backswing deliberately, it's not the worst position for a golfer either, you know. So I think there's loads of them who are good. Davy Fitz is off scratch. I think a bunch of them are really, really good golfers. So the full counties, Rich, are going to be allowed in to the remaining matches of the championship. Is that right?
Yeah, John Kiley was one of the most vocal critics about this rule, but the move to level 3 restrictions means full county panels will be allowed to attend the remaining matches in this year's Gaelic Games Championships. Up until now, access to stadiums was restricted to just the match day playing squads, so that was squads of 26 for hurling and football. Limerick hurling manager John Kiley, as I mentioned, the Mayo football boss James Horan, Dublin ladies football manager Mick Bowen, among those most vocal against that rule, but Minister for Sport Jack Chambers confirming today that the government are relaxing the rules as of this coming weekend.
Yeah, I guess it makes sense if they're mixing a train. Vera Powell not happy, and from the outset, it looks like she's a fair point.
Yeah, Republic of Ireland boss Vera Powell has hit out at UEFA for the delay in getting her squad's COVID-19 test results. The Irish players and staff were tested yesterday morning ahead of tomorrow's must-win European Championship qualifier against Germany. The nearest UEFA-approved lab is in the UK, and it's understood the results won't be available until after the last training session, which took place this evening. Powell expressed her anger over the situation, which is delaying her team selection ahead of tomorrow's crucial tie.
I'm usually not taking out things to the press, but now I would like to say something. We have done our last testing yesterday morning, and if I have understood well, the samples went to first to Northern Ireland, to Belfast, then to Birmingham with a flight, then on car to London. It arrived, should have arrived last night at 9 o'clock, and this morning we got the message that we only get results in the afternoon. This is unacceptable. It's UEFA guidelines. UEFA has certain labs. I do understand that. But it's not as if Ireland is not having labs and not having very, very high qualified labs. And I do understand that UEFA needs to structure it. But why does Germany have already the results? And why do we need to wait till after our last training session? I think that this is something that UEFA really have to sort out. And I usually never use the press for this, but I find this unacceptable.
I think it's fair. I think it's a fair point. Doesn't sound good. Maybe a walkover is the only fair solution.
They all came in negative, thankfully. We just heard that in the past there as well. So that's good. The only player missing essentially tomorrow is Leanne Kiernan. She's got a hamstring injury. Yeah. She's going to miss the game.
Now, there's a text in saying as well, it looked like Grosjean only burnt his hands when he actually tried to climb the barrier. Unreal safety equipment, clothes and cars, or else some kind of divine intervention. Surreal, says a texter. Sadly, the knock Joe Canning took might have looked at that point like it would be the worst blow to the head of the weekend, and by some distance it wasn't. This was just, the sound of it was just sickening.
Yeah, and Wolves say Raul Jimenez is comfortable after undergoing an operation on a fractured skull last night. The striker sustained the injury in a collision with Arsenal's David Luiz, with the Brazilian playing on. Brain injury group Headway have shared their anger and disappointment at the decision to keep Luiz on the field. And Gary Breen told this morning's OTB AM that such decisions shouldn't be left in the hands of players.
It's been well documented now that, say, for example, the PFA, they've been heavily criticised in terms of caring for those players who potentially might suffer for it, and obviously putting in protocols for the ones that playing football now and even the younger generations to make sure that they're not as vulnerable to that scenario. But you're right, I think these decisions need to be made very quickly now, Gerard. That these can't drag on, you know, the impact is too big. And I think certainly when players get those type of injuries, you have to make the decision for them. I was asked by John Duggan on the Saturday afternoon show, did I ever in a game where I had a blow to the head, and the only one I can vividly remember, really, obviously I've taken loads of blows to the game, but where it really affected me was when I was playing for Ireland away to Switzerland. We lost the game 2-0. I took a blow and I have no recollection, and after the game I had no recollection for the last half an hour of that game. Now, that's not to say that the coaching staff or the medical staff, I should say, sorry, with the Irish team were negligent. Of course they weren't, because I'm convincing them, nope, I'm fine. And actually, I don't even think they knew that I'd had a blow to the head. So this is the problem that you have. I just genuinely think that this is something that's just so prevalent right now, and it really needs to be addressed. The right protocols need to be put in place, because the other sports in world, all over the world, are putting football to shame in terms of the protocols that they now have in place, even the likes of cricket.
Gary Breen there, and you can listen to that full interview on the OTB Sports app. It's in your app store. Just search OTB Sports, and that's where you'll find us. All our content is there. It's all available at a simple click. The full interview, well worth catching, from Gary this morning with Owen and Jer. I mean, certainly, Nathan, well, first of all, you wish him in as well. That is just, it was grotesque. It was just awful, and it was really horrible when you heard the sound. I mean, the lack of crowd made it all the more audible. On the Luiz situation, there are protocol in place, like the Arsenal doctors, and I think they have made the point in so much as they can, say, well, we took him off and he passed the tests and therefore he went back on. And the reason he came off was a blood injury, which is, you know, not necessarily a concussion. You can be bleeding and it doesn't mean the force of the impact was so great as to warrant you coming off. What I think has triggered people in this instance is the force of the impact was so obvious. You know, the speed at which Luiz's head hit Jimenez's head was so obvious, and the protocol, they do allow the doctor to say that the player can come off due to a suspected concussion. So, and we see this in rugby, for example. Sometimes a player passes a HIA and the doctor still says, no, I've had a look at this, the incident, and we're just going to sit you out. So I think the upset is the fact that, yes, he passed the protocol, but surely just, never mind a replay, just a one-off viewing of the force with which his head clashed with Jimenez's head should mean there has to be at least a suspicion of concussion. And the protocols allow for the doctor to say suspicion of concussion means you're off. I think that's where people in this instance are a bit unhappy.
Yeah, and I think when you touch on the HIA in rugby, the player leaves the field and somebody else comes on in his place. So there's always a pressure, probably inbuilt in players, to stay on the pitch, rather than, which the Premier League have been looking into by all accounts for the last couple of years, bringing in that rule where they can go off for 10 minutes and somebody else can come on. It seems the delay is that the Premier League are worried that managers might somehow take advantage of this during the game. But you think they just have to implement it and make it far more straightforward. And you're right, when it is such a sickening collision, and like we're well used to collisions happening and players are brought to hospital, and you always assume the next day you hear they're fine, they're up, they're going to be back in a couple of weeks' time, and then you hear today that it's a fractured skull for Raul Jimenez. You do wonder how that sort of collision can happen and David Luiz is able to stay on the pitch. We don't know the exact conversation that happened between the doctor and the player. By all accounts, everything you read about the Arsenal medical staff is that they're to the forefront of the treatment of concussion, but it didn't look good. It looked terrible. And I know it was a blood injury and the blood was pouring through the Terry Butcher-style bandage towards the end of the half, so there was probably no choice. They couldn't stop the bleeding. Mm. But there needs to be a better process in place, because, well, we're seeing what is happening. Like, considering the conversation that's ongoing about heading a football in soccer right now, to have collisions like this and it'd be okay for the player to just play for another half an hour.
Yeah, it's hard to know how there couldn't be a suspicion of concussion, even if he flew through the questions. We talked to Pat Nevin after nine. Richie, if I can just skip ahead just to one final story, people might be interested. Just David Nusafora was speaking to the media today. He doesn't speak that often. So what was he saying?
He gave pretty much his annual briefing. The RFU performance director says the association has no plans to change their overseas player selection policy. Several high-profile internationals could find themselves moving abroad with contract negotiations on hold until the new year. Jonathan Sexton, Peter O'Mahony and CJ Stander are just three of the players whose deals are up for renewal. Nusafora hopes all deals can be sorted the other side of Christmas, but says there'll be no change in their approach.
No, we've got no intention of doing that, Neil, at the moment. I mean, at the moment, the position we've been in, as we've been in all along, is to, if players choose not to play their rugby in Ireland, it's unlikely that we would select them. It's not a hard and fast rule. There is no hard and fast rule about that. We've never had one. But our attitude towards it wouldn't change. We'd be selecting players who stay here and play for our provinces.
Yeah, unlikely is the perfect word, isn't it? If Tadhg Furlong goes, it's more likely. If someone else goes, it's less likely. We'll talk to Brian and Keith about that after 8 o'clock. Mainly, though, we'll be talking Ireland, Georgia, and just where is the Farrell regime. Fellas, we're pretty much done. Nathan Murphy, thank you.
Thanks, Joe.
Richie McCormack, thanks as ever.
Cheers, lads.
Before I go to the ad break competition, we have teamed up with the Ainua Collection Hotels, I-N-U-A, to give away a different weekend break every night this week. So tonight, it's two nights bed and breakfast at the Hillgrove Hotel in Monaghan, which has plenty of museums, theatres and shops for you to enjoy nearby. And you can buy hotel vouchers for any of the nine Ainua Collection Hotels at ainua.ie. And remember, every time you spend more than €100, Ainua donate 5 to Down Syndrome Ireland. To be in with a chance of winning tonight, just identify our mystery voice who takes great offence at accusations his mushroom risotto is too watery.
This was absolutely exceptional. Nothing was sloppy.
He's having a bad weekend.
This was absolutely exceptional. Nothing was sloppy.
Text your name and answer 53106 for 30 cents. We'll contact you after the show. All the thanks to the Ainua Collection Hotels. Get more information at ainua.ie. Now we're talking hurling next.
The News Round on Off the Ball.
With Gillette. We don't just play the game. We change it. Gillette. Made of what matters.